Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. And I'm excited to welcome the program former WWE star, now ROH star, Mike Bennett. Mike, what's up? How are you, Michael?
You know, I'm alive. I'm maneuvering through this pandemic, trying to stay alive. I think I'm doing pretty good so far.
You know, it's interesting, your story. Let's go right into pro wrestling when I think about things, because I look back and I look in your Wikipedia, but look at, you had to really kind of cut your teeth. You didn't just go and get picked up. You went through the whole journey of an independent wrestler, didn't you? For sure. How old were you when you got trained to be a pro wrestler?
Yeah, it's funny, man. I don't think a lot of people, or at least maybe not WWE fans, know of my story or know my journey. I was 15 when I started wrestling, and I'm 35 now. So I'm about 20 years into the industry, which is weird to think at 35, I'm 20,
yeah, exactly.
20 years in an industry. But yeah, I started when I was 15, and I didn't get my first, I didn't really get noticed or recognized until about 10 or 11 years in. I was just doing indies every weekend, doing the grind, driving up and down the East Coast, hitting shows for $20, sometimes no pay, just to get these matches in. So I really grinded on the indies before I even got a sniff at any kind of like national exposure.
And you know, that's the challenge you have to go through, right? Is that in the indies, you're just not getting any money. When I worked down south for Lawler, I worked for Burt Prentice. We're lucky to get a couple bucks to even get a hotel, right? And we're just doing it to love it. You know, we're loving the business. And I wish that the young guys today would love it like we would. We just wanted to wrestle, right? We wanted to work.
Yeah, and you just kind of go and you do it. And you just like, it's kind of like you put in the hours, like you're a electrician or a plumber, or you put in the hours, because if you put in the hours, you're going to get better and you're going to get good. And you have to put in the hours in order to succeed.
It's kind of like, in a lot of ways, if you look at a deserted island, you're on with a bunch of wrestlers. A lot of them are going to give up and quit and get eliminated. Meaning if you stay the course, so I look at a lot of the guys that I worked with back in the day, and they have pretty good high up positions in the business now, because even if they were in the indies, they stayed the course. And I think you saw that too. A lot of guys that kept going and didn't give up have found spots in this business, haven't they?
Yeah. And it's funny you bring that up, because when I run seminars or anytime I talk to any of the younger talent, one of the things I always drive home is that everyone's journey is different. Everyone's going to go through different experiences. Some guys might get signed in 5 years. Some might find, some might find their niche in like 8 years. But the one thing I've learned consistently throughout this industry is that the wrestling industry rewards people that just stick around, that just constantly, constantly stick around. And it's still happening. So I tell guys, if you're still young, or you've been doing this 8 years, 9 years, and you feel like you haven't gotten your break, stick around. Eventually something
will happen. I'll mention two people just to top of my head, because again, I'm been in the wrestling business. I have a lot of head injuries from pro wrestling, but two people I would go with is Scotty D'Amore, and also would go with Adam Pierce. Two people I worked with. I worked with Adam in Michigan when he was 19. And then I worked with Scotty D'Amore in Canada. So when we were working for, I forget, Ike Shaw out in Canada, for him and Ike, and then basically both of them, and they have pretty big spots and organizations now, you know?
Yeah.
And those are just two, a handful. You can look at other people as well and say, yeah, you know, that they stuck it out and they kept in, you know, different indies, even though a lot of people, we went through these cycles in pro wrestling, right? In the time you've wrestled in 20 years, you've seen so many cyclical cycles in the business.
Yeah. And like, I love Scott and I love Adam. Scott's a great dude. He's in a great position right now. And he just stuck around, kept doing it, kept being right place, right time. And Pierce, I know him a little bit more than I know Scott, just because we had our time together in ROH and then our time together at WWE. And Adam's one of those people that he's the epitome of work hard, treat people kindly, don't give up, just constantly, you will be rewarded for it. And now you're starting to see him be rewarded for it. And it's just, I think the world of Adam Pierce. So to see what he's doing now, to see the recognition he's getting, it's just that dude, not only is he great backstage, but he's one of the best in-ring performers, I think, that have ever been in a ring. And I was so excited when I thought he was going to wrestle Roman Reigns. I was like, yes, people are going to get to see Adam Pierce. This is amazing.
See, I don't watch the business anymore, so you have to remind me, but I see Adam just because of Facebook. Yeah. That's where I get my news of pro wrestling, because I want to get my tights on right now and bring and tire and get back in the ring right now. but it's COVID someday. So far we've been hearing about and listen and watching Mike talk about pro wrestling and, you know, breaking into the business, Chris, and he's dealt with, like, he started at 15 years old and he's been in it for, get this, 20 years. So he, like, myself, so you look at things, and he had to work for, like, what, like I did in the pro wrestling business, where I had to work for $20, $30, $40 just to break in. And we just tried to find matches and find indies. And we were talking a little bit about what he's been going with COVID. So go ahead with other question. I've been just asking more pro wrestling industry questions.
Sure, no problem. Well, Mike, you know, tell me a little bit about kind of where you grew up, Massachusetts, and how did you get interested in wrestling?
So I grew up in a very tiny town in Massachusetts. It's called Carver, Massachusetts. It's known for cranberry bogs, believe it or not. It used to be the cranberry capital of the world. Big doings there, I know. But I was just a fan. I was a diehard wrestling fan. My dad took me to go see Monday Night Raw taping at the Worcester Centrum Center in like 99 or 2000. And I got to see Mick Foley win the world title for the first time. And from that moment on, I was absolutely hooked. I was like, oh, I'm a pro wrestler. That's what I'm going to be at 12. I was totally convinced that that was the only path I was going to take. And I went to my parents, I told them, and we kind of worked out this in agreement. We worked out an agreement where when I was either 15 or 16, they would drive me to this wrestling school in New Bedford, Massachusetts, because I couldn't drive at the time. I was still getting my license and my learner's permit, all that fun stuff. So they would drive me, but they said, you have to pursue your education further after high school. And I agreed, and I got my associate's degree in criminal justice. After I held up my end of the bargain, and they held up their end of the bargain, constantly driving me and driving me until I finally got my license. And, then it was off to the races after that.
See, it's interesting you talk about that. You probably watched me in Shotgun Saturday Night when I wrestled, the Nation of Domination, crushing Savio Vega, me and Derek Stone on a Shotgun Saturday Night taping. If you're into the 99s, you're really getting the point where I did TV one time for WWE, where it was kind of like a semi trout. But I also know Mick got my break at Ozark Mountain Wrestling for Burt Prentice. I was wrestling in Pittsburgh. He was on an indie show with me. Mick said, hey, let me give you Burt Prentice's number. And that's what got me into like a real indies, like where it's one of the last territories. Burt and Lawler were running the last of those territories. Before, you know, I had this conversation with somebody who's an indie, you know, cut their teeth like you in the indie, saying, oh, there's no such thing as territories. Well, at that time there still was, and they were still running a 4 or 5 nights a week. I would work for Burt 4, 5, 6 nights a week. And that's how I learned the business. So interesting. You bring up that 99 thing. Okay, Chris, go ahead and ask the next question for Mike.
Oh, no problem. I mean, you know, it's just interesting. Like I said, just the hard work that you put in to, you know, to make your way up to the top. I mean, looking at him, I see no less than at least, 17 championships. But tell us a little bit about that hard work that, you know, is required for young people to get to the top of their field or sport or profession in life. Tell us about that, Mike.
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough to find something that I love to do. And I truly believe that if you love what you do, it never feels like work. It always just feels like you're getting the privilege or the honor to do what you truly love to do. And that's kind of how I always felt about it. Now, there's all sorts of things that go into wrestling that are difficult and that I don't want to do, and that you have to constantly put in the work and the grind. And it just, you know, the days on the road and the time in the gym and the film study and the constant practices and the matches in front of nobody and the grind, it never ends. But like, again, like I said, I was fortunate enough that I truly like absolutely loved pro wrestling. So for me, it was like, well, if I wasn't doing this right now, what else I would be doing? No, I would be wrestling. So this is what I want to do day in and day out. But I think it's important for people to know that there's something to be said about so many things. People think you have to be born with a talent, but I'm a big believer that people are born with talent, but skill is just, is just earned by constantly perfecting your craft, putting in the hours, putting in the work. There are a ton of talented people and there's not a ton of skilled people, because the skilled people have to put in the work day in and day out. If you're talented, you're just on that one step ahead of the skilled people, but you still have to put in that work day in and day out. And that's just what I did. I was like, I may not be the most talented, I may not be the most athletic, but I will damn sure be the hardest worker every single time you see me.
Exactly. And that's so true. And that goes with anything. But when you do something you love, it's a different story. So for example, I ended up having to carry a full-time job for the last 3 years and I left my job. And thank goodness I did. I have a digital marketing tech company. Plus I have a team. Plus also I have the radio and syndication and podcasting. And I finally walked away. And then the last week and a half, my life is just opening up. If you've not heard about a platform called Clubhouse, that's where I'm living. If you jumped on Clubhouse ever, if you do have an iPhone, those wrestling fans are crazy on Clubhouse. I got in a couple rooms and they were talking to me about, you wrestled Jerry the King Lawler and all these different things. And they're just really interesting. I'm surprised pro wrestlers are not jumping on Clubhouse yet. Maybe they have Androids instead of iPhones. Soon it'll be Android. But that passion that I got to speak more, got to speak in front of 80-100 people online when I do rooms where I'm leading the room and speaking to 100 people on how to be successful with a podcast, how to be successful, you know, in business, and how to, you know, what's important about a brand, has taught me in so many ways. That's all I want to do. There's no way I'm going back to the grind again. No way. I don't care. I'd work forever just to do it. And I'm not going to let it fall apart. And that's a great advice you give, Mike, about that, is do something you love. So let's jump a little bit back. And you were talking about, you made a deal with your parents. I want to go into that a little further. Tell us that deal.
So the deal was my parents. So my mom, her mindset has always been for her kids was, I just want you to be happy. I want you to do what makes you happy. She never had a plan for me. She never wanted me to be something that I didn't want to be. My mom's a teacher. My dad's a lawyer. My sister is a teacher. I come from a family of just like teachers and lawyers and all this stuff. And I decided I wanted to be the pro wrestler of the family. And so, but my mom's mindset was always, if you love what you do and you're a good person, I will always support you. She always supported me with it. But my dad was always a little hesitant. He was always like, he was never anti-wrestling. He was always just like, are you sure this is what you want?
Especially being a lawyer, right?
Yes, especially being a lawyer. He always thought it was a fad. He's always like, when's this wrestling fad going to end? When are you going to get over this? And I still joke with him at 35. I'm like, Dad, I'm right around this fad ending soon. This wrestling thing's going to end soon, I promise. But he's actually come around and he's always told me how proud of me he is. But they had a deal because they knew I wasn't going to stop. I was just committed. And I was like, I want to be a pro wrestler. I want to go now. I don't want to wait. I want to do it now. So they were like, wrestling's tough. It's a pipe dream. They used to call it a pipe dream. Like it's difficult. Not everyone makes it. Not everyone succeeds. So you need a backup plan. They wanted me to have a backup plan. To me, it was just a way to get to wrestling school. Exactly. I never looked at it as a backup plan. I was like, I got to go and do this. I'm going to go to college just so I can continue to wrestle until my parents will keep driving me. So I made the deal. I said, if you guys drive me, well, I didn't make the deal. It was all them, but they said, we'll drive you, but you have to further your education. And I said, sure. As soon as I graduate, I'll wrestle all through my high school years. Then as soon as I graduate, I'll wrestle through my college years and then continue it after that. And that's what I did. And I got my associate's degree in criminal justice. They didn't say I had to go to a 4-year school or anything. They just wanted me to have something to fall back on. And that was a 2-year degree in criminal justice.
So you didn't wrestle amateur, did you?
No, I didn't. I played soccer and I played basketball in high school.
Okay. So interesting, you would have gone that route, but again, that's important, the education. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sure you're going to ask some education questions. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, hearing about the education, that's great. And that's the thing, you know, it's, you know, you get your education, but you know, your passion is, you know, what you follow in life. And that's what Mike has done. And what I've seen in the past, people who really have that passion, what they're doing, is sometimes that will get them into other films. And I know Mike has been in different films, Saving Christmas and Almost Mercy. Tell us about that. Tell us about, how did you end up in these different movies?
So there's actually a production company in Rhode Island. It's called Woodhaven Productions, and Chad Verde runs it. Tommy DiNucci runs it. They've started making these films, and Tommy Dreamer was involved with them. And they really started liking working with wrestling guys, because wrestling guys knew all about the grind of just showing up and then just sitting around until it was your time to do something, and then showing up and sitting around and waiting for your time to do something. So having been a fan of mine, they asked me if I would come in and do Almost Mercy first, which I played a police officer. And I said, sure. I guess they enjoyed what I did. And then they kept booking me in all these other films. But I learned an incredible amount doing it. I learned about camera work. I learned about the amount of time and energy and effort that actors put into every single thing they do. It blew me away. It's similar to wrestling, but it's also entirely different. And I try to explain that to people, because with wrestling, you're in front of a live crowd. There's stuff to feed off of. There's stuff to play off of. There's different directions to take your match or your promo based off what the crowd's doing or what they're chanting or what they're not doing.
Yeah.
In films, it's all you. It's all internal. It's all emotional, or it's the person across from you, and it's quiet. You're in front of a camera. It's all about, all right, the camera's on. You got to go now. There's no hype up period. There's nothing. It's cameras on, time to go. So what that taught me was the amount of preparation and just the time and effort they put into all their lines, all their scenes, everything they do. And I really tried to start incorporating that into professional wrestling, just not so much like the acting side of it, but the preparation side of it. The acting side helps, but the preparation side helps 10 times more.
And see, this is the thing, Mike, I don't understand why more pro wrestlers don't take acting courses, because ultimately, you know, what Vince and how they have it so programmed that you can't just go on the fly. You have to follow a script, which I think which is kind of crazy. But if you learned how to act, you could kind of get through that more than, hey, I'm just memorizing it to memorize it. And just seems canned. And right. So what would you say to yourself, and how do you rate yourself from doing the acting as you cutting promos and stuff like that? What do you think of yourself in the business compared to looking at some of the greatest stars of all time that have cut promos?
Oh, so I'm my hardest critic. So I'll always tell you I suck. Whenever I have a promo, I stink. In the ring, I stink. In a promo, I stink. But I put in the time and effort. I actually, for my promos, I've been in the industry long enough. I don't really watch other, like if I'm trying to study about a promo or trying to get ideas, I don't watch wrestling. I'll watch movies to try to get ideas. Exactly. I try to watch actors. I'll watch some of the people that I admire, some of the actors that I look up to, and I try to take from them. Like I really break down scenes. I'll watch a movie that I've always enjoyed. And now having been on the other side of the camera, I'll try to look at it and be like, what's he doing? How can I add that to my pro wrestling? How can I incorporate that? So I try to be totally different. I hope it portrays on screen, but that's always been my mindset for probably the last 7 or 8 years, is like, I want to focus more on how to be an actor so I can emotionally draw people in, as opposed to like promo 101 of like, listen to this, brother, because I think we're getting away from that. And I think we need to draw people in with our eyes, with our emotions and our feelings. And you get that through acting and through movies.
And true. And unless you're cutting the best promos and Jerry the King Lawler, Ric Flair, there's certain people, you know, that they're the best. Well, Lawler was the best, but why Lawler is one of the best, and at least he didn't get to show it, you have to watch a lot of the old stuff, is because he was a radio host and he understood the thing. If I would have been able to do, when I was considered this big giant, wasn't allowed to speak. I'm 6'10" legitimate. And I said, I wasn't, I had to be this big, big instead of being myself. Then it finally, when I did become myself, it was perfect. But that was before my journeys of broadcasting. I produced a cable access radio a cable access pro wrestling show with Aaron Lester, and then also produced a TV show locally in Pittsburgh when I was doing that. So I got my before even it what happened. So it's interesting. All right, Dr. Hall, what next question do you have for Mike?
Oh, well, you know, no problem. It's really kind of a medical question, I guess. And, you know, in Mike being in the business, as long as he's been in it, and, you know, from a medical standpoint, from a doctor standpoint, you know, we look at it and we know there's probably a lot of, you know, injuries that are musculoskeletal, whether they're dislocations or sprains or strains or fractures, you know. So tell me about some of those things that have occurred to you, Mike. I mean, because this is, it's a tough sport.
Yeah, you know, it's I love professional wrestling so much, but there's also a part of me that constantly goes, why are you so stupid to keep doing this? Like, why are you beating your body so up? Like, so beating your body up so much? Because it does take its toll. I mean, I'm 35 and I actually genuinely, after 20 years, I'm, knock on wood, I'm blessed that I haven't had too many injuries. I've had bumps and bruises. I've had concussions, which I consider very serious injuries. And I don't want to downplay that at all. But I mean, one of the worst things that ever happened to me was I dislocated my patella tendon in the middle of a match. I went to kick a guy, my left leg and knee hyperextended, and my kneecap just completely twisted over to the left side of my leg. To which I then, the idiot that I am, sat down, rolled my knee pad down, grabbed the kneecap and just pulled it back into place. Because I was like, oh, I got to finish the match because I'm a stupid wrestler. Finished the match and then went to the doctor, and the doctor was genuinely like, he's like, does this happen a lot to you? And I was like, no, that's the first time. And he was like, well, you popped it back into place perfectly. So there was no ligament damage whatsoever. I was like, that's fantastic. So I was actually, I kind of sidestepped the landmine there where I was able to just kind of rehab the quad to keep the patella tendon in place. It still gives me trouble now. I got some arthritis in it now, but you know, I've been lucky that I haven't really broken any bones. I've had, I think I broke a finger one time, but besides that, I've been fairly lucky, and I'm hoping that stays. But it, you know, the wear and tear beats you up. My neck's like the best invention that this world has ever created was the backup cam to a car, because I no longer have to do the slow methodical turn of trying to see. I can just look at my backup cam when I'm backing up.
I'm glad I only wrestled 9 years in a way, because my body's beat up in certain ways, but not completely.
Yeah,
as a big guy before, big guys didn't have to take so many bumps when I was then to now, they take a lot more bumps. And then if I would have gone to, and I think the age came right after I left, was they took a lot of bumps and as much as anybody else. But the little guys still take too many bumps. Yeah. And I don't, what do you think of that? And I'm going to go right into what's, you know, being back at ROH, go right to that question to kind of finish up. But I want to say, what do you think of the fact of, you know, of the guys now? I'm watching them, they're taking a lot more bumps than when I was in the business. So is this, how long a career you think some of these guys are going to have?
You know what? I think it depends. And I hear this a lot, and I've really dissected it and really thought about it, because on one hand, the business is evolving. And you always have to evolve with the business. Like the tale as old as time is, the older generation is always going to tell the younger generation not to do something. Younger generation is going to continue to do it, and then it's going to evolve. And that's just the way it happens with music and sports. It's just, that's how it goes. That's life. Do guys take a lot of bumps nowadays? Yes, absolutely. Do I tell guys to take that many bumps? No, I try to tell them to do the crazy stuff that they can do, but fit it in the context of a match that makes sense, and that you can tell a story and that people can connect with you emotionally. On the flip side, we're also not wrestling as much as guys back in the day did. We're not on the road 7 days a week. We're not on the road twice on Sunday. We're not wrestling on Christmas and Thanksgiving. Oh, really? The guys aren't on the road 300 days a year. And especially in companies like AEW or Ring of Honor, and even WWE now, they're not running as many house shows, and they may not go back to running house shows. So there is a balance of like, are you doing more? Yes. Is it wearing out your body? Undecided yet, because they're not exact. Guys were going 7 days a week. You know this, 7 days a week, twice on Sunday, away from their home 300 days a year. That was beating up their body. We're not doing that quite as much now. So I don't know if it will, but there's always going to be a level of risk that comes with wrestling, and you kind of take the risk reward with it.
All right, Chris, go ahead and summarize Mike for us. But before that, tell us what's going on with being back in ROH. You know, after the time of WWE and COVID and everything, you're back with ROH. And how excited are you about that?
You know, it's my home. And I tell everyone that'll listen to me, Ring of Honor is my home. They gave me my first big break. And now that I'm back, like, it's just one of those things where I'm so genuinely excited to be home, and so genuinely excited to be like with my friends and just doing what I love in a company that I love with a style of wrestling that I love, that it's just, I'm happy. I love the product Ring of Honor is putting forward, where it's very much sport based and they're getting away from kind of hokiness and they're really focusing on pro wrestling, different types, pure wrestling, lucha style, strong style, like even with the new group Violence Unlimited, even more violent style. It's just everything comes back to pro wrestling, which is what I think wrestling is missing nowadays. Ring of Honor is doing it perfectly. So I'm excited of what the future holds, and I'm excited to work with this roster and just get really, you know, just get going again.
Yeah, and it's where you really made it in a lot of ways. And so you're excited about being able to share with those guys and say, hey, this is the step you need to go if you want to go to AEW or WWE, but ROH is on its way as well. So again, this is the age of the dawn of pro wrestling can have so much more competition because there's so many different styles of wrestling and everything. So I'm excited for you. All right, go ahead, Chris. Summarize Mike for us.
Well, no problem. I mean, well, there you have it. I mean, that's the passion of what you want to do in life. I mean, going to the top of your profession. And so Mike Bennett has done that. He's talked about what's required. He's talked about the challenges in wrestling. And so we're excited. We're excited for all he's doing and the great message that he's put out for our listeners today. So, wow. Thanks for coming on the show today, Mike.
No, thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it very much.
Where can we follow you and find information on your worst best place?
Yeah, please follow me on Twitter at Real Mike Bennett. Follow me on Instagram at The Real Michael Bennett. And I just put out a documentary where I went back to the Indies for like 2 weeks. I did a tour. I did some shows and some seminars. And it's all about me kind of falling back in love with pro wrestling, finding what I love to do and all that stuff. And it's on ASY, Asai TV YouTube channel. So just type in Asai TV, you'll find it. And that's it's all about my journey in pro wrestling. So just follow that.
All right, Mike, we appreciate it. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, guys. That was the Dr. Christopher Hall Show. Take care.